Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are in studio with the Reverend Heber Brown, who is pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in Baltimore, or as it says on the sign outside. What does it say outside your church?
Servant leader.
I love that. Servant leader. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. Before we get there, I want to remind you, The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, green and sustainable topics. Up-to-date information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. Over the weekend, I was looking at Facebook, or I'd rather say my wife was looking at Facebook, and she said to me, "See what the Reverend Heber Brown's doing? He's leading demonstrations to young people to the streets of Baltimore a week from today." That was yesterday, saying that we shouldn't build this youth jail, and we should talk to him. I said, "Well, you're probably right." So, so here we are, and you can join us at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Now, before we get into the, I was teasing for you in the air about why you're causing all this trouble, but in all seriousness, what I asked you though before we went into the on air live here was that Hathaway Farabee and others have told me from Safe and Sound, that the governor has put on hold the money he was allocated to build this prison. So clearly something is up. I mean, he's had a lot of pressure from a lot of sectors that this jail is not the answer to the problem that we're facing with crime and with young people being in trouble and the rest. There's a different way out of this. So, I mean, what about, I mean, you're having this administration, but he's already said he's backing away from allocating the money.
Yeah, and that's a step in the right direction to put it on hold. But our real thrust is really to put it on stop. I mean, all of these reports from the Justice Policy Institute to the Just Kids Partnership to even the National Council on Crime and Delinquency say this is not the right way to go. It is unwise. It is costly. And if you're really concerned about public safety in Baltimore City, you don't want to build a $104 million youth facility to get to that end. And so while we're thankful for it being on hold, we have no assurances that it's going to stay on hold after the election on Tuesday, November the 2nd. We want to push it to stop. And so this is a great opportunity, actually, for Governor O'Malley and his administration to really get some energy behind his campaign and come out with the people. You said at the beginning, I'm leading the young people. I actually will put it the other way around, Mark. The young people are leading me. I'm actually, when we have our meetings, I'm the elder in the room at 30 years old, if you can believe that. These are high school students and college students who are actually the ones who are leading and really putting this thing together. And so I'm just doing what, you know, I feel I need to do as an adult to help support what they want to do and what I feel is a conviction of mine as well.
Pastor Brown, let me ask you. I was speaking to the warden of the facility downtown. And he understood exactly what I was saying. I am 100% squarely in your corner. I've spoken with the governor. I've spoken with former Governor Bob Ehrlich about this issue, trying to elicit some concrete answer. Both of them do amazing jobs at dancing around this issue. But the warden reminded me, and I want to put this in your court to get your
response.
The city, well, it's not a juvenile facility. He's warden of our intake, our correctional facility in downtown Baltimore, including our central booking facility in downtown Baltimore. And he reminded me, Pete Francis is his name, he reminded me that this was, in fact, a mandate that we have to get these young people out of our adult facility, that they are mandated to be more than just separated by a wall, but separated by a facility to keep these young people out of harm. There are some special needs that they should be getting, like education, recreation, and other things while they're incarcerated. And that was the reasoning for the new facility. And when it's put in those terms, I pause for a moment because I tried to figure out how you and other activists who are really being very effective at making this an issue, how you are responding to that, that this is a mandate to protect these children who are now being housed in an adult facility.
Well, and I've heard that argument, and certainly there are many valid points to that. I would only say that from what these reports are saying that I have here with me and what we're putting out online as well is that a new prison is not the answer to that. New policies are. I mean, when you consider the fact that African-American youth in Baltimore City are disproportionately charged as adults from Jump Street, from the get-go, then we recognize that we need new policies in place. We don't need a $104 million youth jail. We need to address the policies that fill these jails with young people in the first place. And many of them, and I'm not a person who's just an activist on the issue or some theoretical or philosophical whatever engagement on the issue, I'm actually a mentor within the system. And so I mentor young men who are charged as adults in the Eager Street Academy. And the stories that I hear and what they're sharing is very clear that they need services that they're not getting in that facility. And if we were to adjust the policies and not fill these facilities with young people, we'd be able to give them services. And we just, based on what we're reading from these very smart people who did these wonderful reports, they're saying, no, it's not new prison. It's new policies, and we can really deal with this issue. Because if you build that facility, you're going to fill it. You don't spend $104 million on a facility and not fill it up.
Now, a lot of people are calling in, so let me get to the phone so other people join this conversation. I'm going to say that, you know, I want to talk about what you think these new policies should be, because it's been very hard to turn this juvenile justice system around. I've been at this on the air actively for over 17 and a half years pushing these issues, and we haven't gotten there yet. And I must say this administration has gotten there further than any other, but that's not hasn't gone anywhere near far enough. So, and if you couple that with reading this Saturday's New York Times, Charles Blow, his column on the latest studies of marijuana use in America and in incarceration, that all the studies show that young white Americans have a much higher rate of use of marijuana than African Americans do, much to the myth that we have in America about drug-using black kids. Right. But that the unbelievable amount, over 70% of the kids going to jail for marijuana, are young black kids from the inner cities being arrested for carrying something in their pocket. So, I mean, and so small amounts. So these are real issues here that we're talking about. Who are we incarcerating and why? 410-319-8888. Aaron in East Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Aaron.
How are you all today?
Hi, Aaron.
Welcome.
Well, Brother Brown, you keep up the fight because it's very well needed, and I will be there with you on Sunday. And I'd also like to state that isn't it amazing that all these black elected officials in our city gave their support to Martin O'Malley without even asking that not be built? And the only delegate who fought for that is Delegate Jill Carter. Not even the delegates whose district that's going to be in have raised their voices one way or the other, or the senator from that district.
We also have to remember, and just in fairness politically here, that this jail was funded and put together under Robert Ehrlich's administration and continued under Martin O'Malley's administration. Both candidates have supported this jail. Both major candidates have supported this jail. And one of those two major candidates, I mean, you may vote green, but one of those major candidates will be governor. So, I mean, that's...
Yeah, and I think the thing is, with that, yes, Ehrlich started, but when O'Malley won the election and became governor, you want to sit in that chair. You take on what was there sitting in that seat when you got there. And if you really want to show a difference between yourself and your predecessor, then show a difference in your engagement of juvenile justice issues in Baltimore City. If you want to say, I'm so different than Robert Ehrlich, then be different and say, I'm not going to continue with this unwise. I mean, on the heels of a recession, you really want to spend state tax dollars, taxpayers' money, and $104 million youth facility in a district that's already saturated with these facilities? It's ridiculous.
So very quickly, unless anything, I think, jump in here. I don't want to. Before we go back to the phones, because there's a lot of people calling in, we got to get them in here. I want to know what you and others are saying about what comes in its place. I mean, the reality is, most young people in prison do not need to be in prison. They need to be in community facilities where they can be cared for and turned around and become whole and part of where we are. There are too many young people, though, in our communities because of the conditions people come from that are violent and dangerous to themselves and to those around them. You've got to deal with that as well.
And the question is, what we say, the question is that the majority? Do people believe that the majority of young people are the ones that you just described in terms of these very violent persons who need some more urgent and intense assistance and rehabilitation? Or do we believe that the majority of those who are incarcerated are those who had a bag of weed in their pocket, or, you know, who just had a bad relationship with the officers in their neighborhood and they were looking for something to put them in for? And so, I mean, that's one of the questions that we have to answer. So what do we do with the monies? You mentioned some of them. And the young people in the the people who we're talking to, because we're actually in that community. We have young people right now who are in the Latrobe Projects knocking on doors and connecting with neighbors. And what they're saying, of course, is we need mentoring programs. We need more support for multi-systemic therapies. We need a more proactive engagement if you're really serious about public safety, and not this reactive, knee-jerk reaction. I mean, it's politically sexy to just keep on building these facilities. But if you really want to get to the root of the issues, you got to do something else. And so the something else that we feel is the mentoring programs, is the mental health services that many of these young people in these systems need, some mental health support. And so this is where the money needs to go, as opposed to going to building just another building to incarcerate.
410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. It's number here. Clarice in Park Heights, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Clarice.
Now, all this money that O'Malley spent for this jail could have better been used for all these people that work for the state that keeps getting furloughed and laid off. O'Malley just has to, it looks like first it was all these kids he arrested. Now he's building the jail for all these kids. So what is that telling you? And as I hear, $300 for each kid bed he gets in his pocket. So it's a business. It's all is a money business. Now I'll take your answer off the air.
I'm not sure what she meant by a money business, other than I think we all know that the state does is poised to benefit anytime we continue to build a facility, and the services that will be provided, the contracts that will go along with that, not just the contracts to build, but the contract to provide the other services that are needed. I do want to ask you, Pastor Brown, because I think Mark is on to something when he talks about, I think we can all agree that we have to come up with different policy. But as Mark said, we have been woefully unsuccessful in this state at translating that will that I see in you, I see in these dynamic young people from the Algebra Project and other places who speak so articulately about the need to not build the prison and educate children. But I'm not sure, and maybe you can educate me on this, Pastor, where the disconnect is. We don't seem to be able to find the success that is needed to turn these young people's lives around. They're building a prison because of many reasons, but one of the reasons is they believe there has to be a place to incarcerate this continuing coming tide of young people who are going to need to be housed.
And I think the question is, then, for that very good point, Anthony, I think the question is, have we ever really tried as a city to really put full energy and resources and political will into uplifting our young people? I mean, we're just coming out of a summer where the city had to shut down pools because they said they ran out of money. Now, if you're shutting down pools because you run out of money, if the rec centers are getting closed because you're running out of money, but somewhere in the couch you find $104 million for this facility, that's a problem. That's a problem. Let's really try. I would say we've never really tried as a city. If we really claimed every child, and I guess as a father now, and I have two boys now, and so something is going on inside of me, Anthony and Mark, where I'm not just concerned about my sons, but I know my sons are going to play in the neighborhood with other people's children and go to school with other people's children. So I'm looking at all these children as my children. That whole village concept that we like to throw out there, and it takes a village, that's happening in my spirit, where I'm seeing every child as my child. And what I demand for my child, I'm demanding for the children of Baltimore City as well. Let's build schools. I mean, come on. When was the last school built in this city where people in black neighborhoods, children can go and get flat screen TVs and state-of-the-art technologies? And so I really think it's an issue of having the political will. And we're in a time and a window where we can force the hand of those who want our votes. We can help shift that political will and say, this is what you need to be thinking about if you really want our support.
Let us come back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Eunice in the West Side, you're on the air. Hi, Eunice, you there? Ernice, maybe? O'Hara, she's not there? Let's go to David. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, David.
David Miller, how are you?
Pretty good.
You're on the air,
You're on the air, David.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
You can.
I want to thank Heather Brown and the Algebra Project and Mark, you and Anthony, for bringing this issue to the forefront. Just very quickly, I mean, I've been to every juvenile facility in the state, and the reality is, as Brother Sheba talked about, the vast majority of these young people that are locked up, whether male or female, are nonviolent offenders. I think at the end of the day, gentlemen, we need we don't need just leadership. We need transformational leadership, particularly in Annapolis. And a lot of times we have deemed folks leaders, and there's no legacy. There's no track record of them really being able to do anything related to systems reform. The final thing, and I talked to Brother Brown a couple of weeks ago, there are some models and some examples of community mobilization efforts, systems reform. One of the most notable ones is the Ella Baker Center for Nonviolent Change in Alameda County, right outside of Oakland, where they launched an initiative called Books Not Bars, where they were able to divert monies that were going to go toward a juvenile facility, and that money was then diverted to the Alameda County school system. But it took a groundswell of both youth, parents, adults, as well as clergy, and a cross-section of people who said the reality is, as we lock up these young, particularly these young men, Mark and Anthony and Heber, we then see them on the adult side. When you talk to these adult male inmates, the vast majority of them have been to Hickey, have been to Sheltenham, have been to Noyes, have been to the Carter Center. And so we know that if we can really begin to mobilize community organizations and a cross-section of constituents, we stand a chance of really healing these young men and young women and reducing the likelihood that they will become career offenders.
David, it's always good to hear from you, and the work you do around this country is remarkable, and it's always good to have you as a guest on the show as well. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
I think what David's saying, and this is a show for an entire hour another that tails onto this topic, and I raise this a lot. 30 years ago, more than that, Al, but maybe close to 40 years ago, when I first came back to Baltimore for a while and was first a gang worker and then worked in a pretrial intervention program, youth gang worker, the program we had called pretrial intervention was federally funded. Eddie Harrison was the guy who ran that program back then, an ex-con who had been on death row. And we had counselors, and 7 or 8 counselors were there, people who train young people in work. A GED program in school was there. We were therapeutic counselors, therapeutic training, worked with family counseling and the kids, group sessions, individual counseling. The kids were there every day who had been arrested in their first or second time offense for a nonviolent offense, first and second time offenders. The recidivism rate of our kids was like 20% because of the intensive counseling those kids received. And there are programs that work to keep kids in the community if we're willing to put the resources into them. Just begin to get kids and turn them. Granted, there were more jobs for kids to go to back then and all the rest. That notwithstanding, there are other ways of addressing this problem than the way we're addressing them, is what I think we're saying here.
Exactly.
Because where we want to invest the money.
Yeah.
If we invest money, let's say, in training probation and parole officers to be real therapists, counselors, family counselors, and the like, that goes a long way to working with the people who they have to work with, as opposed to just being somebody who stamps papers and sees that they check in and have them do their urine tests. Mm-hmm.
But, Mark, I think that you and Heber and David Miller all are saying these wonderful things, but the will, we keep talking about, we have not as a city, as a community, tried this to 100% draw a line in the sand and say we're going to save our children. One of the reasons is when we talk, Mark, when we do shows about juveniles who are involved in criminal activity, many times we have people who call in and say, Pastor Brown, I want that young person locked up. I want that young person removed from my child's classroom. I want that young person removed from my neighborhood. People seem to be, now I could be completely misreading this, they're not in the mood for these long speeches we give, Mark. They are in the mood. They're in the mood for
you.
They're really in the mood for us to do something, Heber, about these children.
Well, before you do that, Heber, I think we have one of those callers on the line. Let's go to him and let you respond to him. And I could be wrong about this, but that's what my screen says. Daryl, you're on the air from Parkville.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Hey, Daryl,
welcome.
Hi, welcome. The first time I'm calling to the show. The reason I was calling is I actually agree with the $104 million facility. I think the kids need a deterrent not to be out here acting a fool. The problem is the juveniles hide behind being a juvenile, so they can still cause fights on bus, cause ruckus in the neighborhood, and nothing will happen to them because they know they're 15, 16, and 17 years old. I mean, peer pressure, I don't think having a counselor is going to stop peer pressure on Friday evening. I don't think having the a counselor is going to turn that household from bad parents to good parents. The whole thing comes down to parenting, and I don't think having a counselor or a mentor is just not going to solve the issue when it comes to peer pressure on a Friday night and Saturday night when kids run up and down Harford Road. I live in Northeast Baltimore. Kids run up and down Harford Road and see it every Friday and Saturday night. They're riding dirt bikes all in the spring and summertime, but there's no deterrent because they're all juveniles and they can hide behind being 15 and 16 years old.
I would say to that, one, and thank you for the comment, it's something that I hear from time to time. But I would say, number one, how do you hide behind being a juvenile? I mean, the truth of the matter is a juvenile is a juvenile. I really think that the real issue is that we have adults who are hiding behind their irresponsibility to do what it takes to mentor and love these children up. Mark, I have big bags under my eyes, and so I'm kind of not trying to not look at your camera, but I have big bags under my eyes.
Can't see because you're too young to have bags, don't worry about it.
That's right.
I have a newborn son. I have a son who is 1 month old, and a part of my responsibility as a father is to stay up with that boy all night long. Last night, I think I got three hours of sleep because he wanted to stay up all night long, and I had to comfort him. That's what my responsibility was as his father. And so I think it's not juveniles hiding behind their age. It's adults hiding behind not wanting to step up to do what it takes. Lord knows, as a pastor, I have enough on my plate. But I'm extending myself because I don't want to be on these airwaves or on Facebook or online talking what other people need to be doing when I'm not doing nothing myself. And so we need to step up to the plate. And another thing we would look at, too, is 40% of all correctional facilities in the state of Maryland are found in Baltimore City. 40% of all correctional facilities are found right here in this city. What does that say to us as a city in terms of our commitment to our young people and our commitment to adults, our commitment to a really safe city? It doesn't send a good message to me and many others.
People are calling to ask a question, Heber. They want to know about the march, what time it is, where it is. Yeah. We had a number of callers just leaving messages.
Wonderful. Yes, Youth Justice Sunday is this Sunday, October 31st, 2010. It begins at 4 p.m. at 1010 East Monument Street, right there where the Dunbar football team plays. And then we'll march down to the site of where this proposed jail is supposed to be built. And it's going to be a wonderful event. For more information, you can go to my blog, Faith in Action. online.com. You can go to lbsbaltimore.org, or you can call 443-415-7974.
And your way, we have some time left, but on your way out the door, make sure that Justin Levy, one of our producers, gets that, and we'll put it all up on the website, and you'll have it
perfect.
All up there.
Appreciate it.
People can just go to steinershow.org and get all the information you need to find out about the rally and the march. And Mike, you're on the air.
Brother Huber, keep doing what you're doing. The key, I think, is in what he said, is that he demands for his child what he demands for other children what he demands for his child. That indicates that he values all children, and that's one of the problems that we have in this country. And, you know, related to the earlier segment, advertising works, whether you're selling toothpaste, tennis shoes, or stereotypes, or, in this case, the prison industrial complex. You know, we've had a soundbite grooming in America for the past 50 years. It's hard for us to hold opposing thoughts in our head, but I think you all are right. If you follow the money and follow the policy and not the hype and not the spin, we start to look at what values we're sending to our children, because they're not only listening to the advertising, they're listening to what we're saying in the allocation pie charts and as it emerges through what we send a message to them as what's important to them. And so it's important to follow that money. Our larger policy issues really have to be dealt with. It's the war on drugs and the nonviolent offenders, as Brother Hubert has said. And if we're not focusing on the relative costs that we're spending and how you said, Mark, you've been doing this for 30 years, but, I mean, part of it is pressure coming from the national level. And until we see ourselves in a larger context, you know, we'll continue to have these good brothers like yourself and like myself who in the same spirit of fatherhood, said, you know, this is unacceptable. But if you're not linking arms with others and looking at this total systemic context in the pie chart, right, you got to contrast it to what else we're spending, we're going to continue to have that problem. And I'll just finally say that, you know, if that weren't the case, we wouldn't be incarcerating kids when it costs more to do that than to send them through K through 12 through boarding school and have $25,000 left over for college. Right, so we have to really look at some of these larger contexts.
Mike, thank you all for your thoughts. Let's get another caller in here before we end the hour. A very quick thought from Betty. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I will try to be calm. But what I want to say is that I support what this minister is doing. I support your march, and I support the action that you're taking, because they're just building this this prison industrial system. It's just an economics, another economic arm for the powers that be. Now, the other thing I'm concerned about is the follow-up after the march. I would like to join your group. We need to bring in other ministers. We need to bring in our elected officials. And we need to redirect this money. Okay, I'll listen for your comment.
Thank you, Betty, so much. Why don't you finish up, Heber?
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Sister Betty. God bless you for that support. And we're so thankful to have at least 15 are on this flyer, 15 ministries and pastors all around the city who are signed up in support. We're going to have church buses and church vans bringing little old ladies from churches and young people down to this field. This is a movement of love. This is not a anti-anybody rally on this Sunday. This is because we love our children. We recognize we've not done all that we can do, and we're going to come together to celebrate a resurrection of spirit in terms of reaching out to our young people. And so, you know, thank you for that support. The follow-up is going to be this. We're going to be asking, number one, we're going to be holding elected officials accountable. This is what, you know, this is going to be about. We're going to be holding people accountable after this date. Matter of fact, the rally's taking place 48 hours before Election Day on Tuesday. It'd be a great chance for politicians to come out and support. And if you're absent and if you're silent, then that's going to send a message to the thousands that show up as well. Number two, we're going to be asking people who show up to actually mentor and to show up and be an advocate for these young people that are in these systems. I'm actually in the business of showing up with young people when they go to their pretrial hearings, when they go to their different hearings they have to go to, because many of them stand alone before that judge. And many of, especially young people who are charged as adults, don't even always have legal counsel with them as they stand before the judge. We need some loving fathers, old school village fathers and old school village mothers, to stand with our young people as they go through this trial and love them up and out of this system so that they can turn around and do the same for their peers back in the community as well. So this Sunday, I was on the over the weekend in connection with Dr. and you appreciate this, Mark, Sister Barbara Johnson Reagan, the freedom right. singer from the 60s. And we were in communication. She sends her blessing to this. She said she would be here if she could to lead us in singing the freedom songs. And so we're really looking at this as a continuation of the liberation struggles of the 60s and 50s and 60s and 70s. And so it's going to be a great day this Sunday, 4 o'clock at the Dunbar football field.
One of the things that the movement to reform juvenile justice in the state of Maryland has been missing has been the grassroots up from the bottom. Maybe this is the beginning.
And the voices of children. And
yes.
The voices of
thank you, Anthony. Mm-hmm. And the voices of children. Reverend Heber Brown, thank you so much for joining Anthony McCarthy
thank
and
you,
Mark
Ma.
Steiner
thank
here.
You,
it's been great to have you both. Have you here. And we'll do more of this. We'll follow up and see what's going on, and we will try to come down on Sunday ourselves.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break and come back. Bob Somerby joins us. He's a humorist, editor of the Daily Howler, to get your thoughts and ideas on Juan Williams and media. And should he have been fired, let go? What does it say about where we are in the media? And more during the course of that hour, so you can join us for that. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. We'll be right back.